Welcome to the Homeschool Sanity Show, your weekly prescription for happier, healthier homeschool living. I'm your host, Dr. Melanie Wilson, Christian psychologist turned homeschooling mother of six.
Hey, homeschoolers. I know you've heard of the Charlotte Mason approach to education, but do you really know how to make it work for your family? I didn't before my interview with Cindy West. You don't want to miss it. But first, I have an apology and an invitation. The apology is that if you texted to receive Barb Raveling's Bible study last week, you didn't get it. That code won't work. You'll need to go to homeschoolsanity.com/truth to claim that study. Many of you did, so I'm glad you got it that way. The invitation is for you to join me on my Facebook page. On Tuesdays at 4 Eastern, 3 Central, I'm going to be doing a live video, sharing a homeschool resource and answering your questions. For the next several weeks, I will also be giving away resources to one of the people who comments on the videos. I am so excited about this. I have received some great goodies from top homeschool companies that I can't wait to share with you. Make sure you're following me at facebook.com/psycho with six. That's the number six. If you want to know exactly what I'll be giving away, make sure you're subscribed to Psycho with Six. I'll email you the featured product of the week on Tuesday morning. The teaching tip of the week is to talk with your kids as you read to them. Use curriculum and read alouds as jumping off points for sharing what you know, what's really important to you. I often do this with our Bible lessons. I share how God has worked in my life in ways that are related to what we are studying in our Apologia Bible lesson. I talk about what I am seeing in the culture and news that are related. In the same way, during our Mystery of History lessons, I talk about our ancestors' experience, and because we are in the amazing more recent history of Volume 4, I can even talk about my own experience. Curriculum should be a guide or spine for us teaching what we feel called to teach and not our master. I also frequently stop and make sure my kids know the vocabulary, and I check for understanding. We keep them awake and engaged this way. I find the lessons take longer, but are much richer as a result. Now for this week's topic. The Charlotte Mason homeschooling approach is so popular. But how can we keep our homeschool sanity using it? That was my question for Cindy West. Cindy is a 17-year homeschooling veteran of three children who has used an eclectic Charlotte Mason style from the very beginning of their adventure. She came home from the public school classroom hoping to offer her children an excellent education that also happened to fit in with a school-is-life atmosphere. The Charlotte Mason method fit the bill, mostly. She'll explain that she isn't a purist. Currently, Cindy's daughter is a sophomore in college who has made a wonderful transition from Charlotte Mason homeschooling to the traditional college classroom, by the way. And she's homeschooling her two boys, a junior and fourth grader. If you're not acquainted with Cindy, I know you'll love her. Cindy, I am so excited to have you join me again on the Homeschool Sanity Show because this is the second time that you have been my guest. We did an earlier podcast episode on nature walks that I'm going to link my listeners to in the show notes for this episode. But today we have a different topic altogether, and I am really excited about it because it is something that is really popular with homeschoolers today. And I think there's a lot of confusion about how this could fit in to a sane homeschooling lifestyle. So that is what we're going to talk about today, specifically Charlotte Mason homeschooling. So for my listeners who don't know, can you explain who Charlotte Mason was?
Okay, I can do my best. First, thanks for having me today. It's always good to talk with you, Melanie. So Charlotte Mason was a British educator in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And she had a vision that all children deserved a good education. So kind of the history back then was that if you were rich, you got a good education. Otherwise, you were trained for a trade or something like that. And so she felt like all social statuses should get a really good education. So she taught for a while in one of those schools that was teaching the richer children, I guess is a good way to put it. And kind of this whole time, maybe over 10 years or so, she was getting a vision for what she could do to make this more fair for everybody. So soon after she left teaching, she went to a college where she had a chance to train some teachers. And in teaching and in giving lectures, she started to see this need for training parents how to raise children. She saw this need that parents maybe weren't quite as educated as they needed to be just in raising kids. And so she started giving specific lectures on that topic, which is really interesting because she never had any children of her own. So funny, ironic, but she did a good job teaching. And they were so popular, these lectures were so popular and so helpful that they actually were turned into a book eventually. And that is the book that you may or may not have heard of before called Home Education. She was there 5 or so years. And in 1891, she actually opened her own house of education, it was called. And it was specifically to train governesses and other people who worked with children on how to raise children, teach children well. And it was at this point that she was really able to start teaching about her philosophies and methods for training and teaching children. By 1892, this had grown to there was a college that was training actual teachers, school teachers, about her philosophies and her methods. And I guess you could kind of say the rest is history. So we're talking more than 100 years ago now. Charlotte Mason began kind of pulling together what her philosophy of education was and the methods that she wanted people to use to make those philosophies and education jive together. And we still have people, especially in the homeschool world, following those philosophies today.
Right. And it is amazing, the legacy. I'm sure she had no idea the impact that she would have on future generations. I'm sure she would be thrilled, though.
I think so.
Yes. The next logical question then is, what are the basic tenets of Charlotte Mason's educational philosophy?
Okay, that's way more difficult to just share than you would think, because she was pretty deep, and there were lots and lots of things that we could talk about today. But I'd like to kind of separate those into two parts. So we can kind of call one her philosophy, and the other her methods. And if you were to search online, you could easily search for Charlotte Mason's 20 principles. And those 20 principles kind of lay out the philosophical side of it. If you've ever heard of the saying, education is an atmosphere, a discipline, and a life, those are three of the parts of her 20 principles. You may have also heard the idea that a child's mind is a bucket to be filled. That's one of her philosophies. Another one would be that children are capable of handling really, really big ideas. So we don't ever want to dumb down curriculum for them. So there are 20 of these principles. And those are just a few that you've probably heard of before. You can find these principles on the ambleside.com site. And what's cool about that is they have these 20 principles laid out very clearly in her language. And then right beside that, they kind of have them laid out in modern day language. So it makes it a little easier for us to understand. And while I'm on that, let me mention that Charlotte Mason's entire book series, I mentioned the book Home Education, but she wrote other books as well. So you can find her entire Charlotte Mason series written by herself free online on that ambleside.com site as well. Part of what maybe overwhelms some people sometimes when they go straight toward those books is they're written in older English. We weren't talking the same way that we talk now, 120 years ago. So they are a little bit difficult to understand, but they're really, really good books if you have the time to dive in and take a peek. So the second part of that, I talked about when we think about Charlotte Mason tenets, we think about it kind of in her principles, those 20 principles, and then we also think about it in the actual methods that she used. And my goodness, there are just lots and lots of things that could make a Charlotte Mason method. And I think I'd like to start off by telling you that there are certain things that sort of define the Charlotte Mason method, and then there are other things that are very much open to a teacher's interpretation. So, for instance, short lessons define a Charlotte Mason education. Living literature defines a Charlotte Mason education. We'll go back to those in just a few minutes. Narration, plenty of time outdoors for play, nature study. Then there are other things that are a little bit more up to, in my opinion, the teacher's discretion, and that would be things like math. The way you do math, you can kind of do it in a Charlotte Mason way, which would be doing it with short lessons. And if we're talking about living education, you might do it in a way that your kids are really connected with it. It's real life. That's kind of doing math in a Charlotte Mason way. So I don't know, where would you like me to dive in on these methods? Because there's just so many places we could go.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with living literature, because
okay,
I think that is one of the ways in which I have been a Charlotte Mason homeschooler, and I'm a big believer in that. So can you kind of explain a little bit more about what that looks like?
Okay, that is my favorite part, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So living literature, I kind of alluded a little bit when I was talking about living math. Living anything basically means you are connecting with the thing that you're talking about. So living literature is, as an example, it's going to be a book that really places you in the time of history, for example, or with a person who is a scientist. If you're reading a science biography, it's real. It's it puts you in the time and place. It's written with just in-depth language. It's not dumbed anything down for your children. The best way I can describe it, think of when you're trying to teach your children reading and you read those books that are very, very simple, like Dick and Jane books. There's a lot of book titles out there that read like Dick and Jane. They're very short. They're very choppy. They use words that they think children can read easily, but the stories just fall flat. Mm-hmm. Living literature is the opposite of that. It's using rich language, rich experiences, and it's really making you feel like you are part of the book. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay.
I was interested in Charlotte Mason's concept and definition of living literature, and was reading that she believed that it was emotional, so it connected with readers in an emotional way, which I really liked, and it was also creative. And so textbooks, the typical textbooks that you and I learned from when we were in school, are definitely not living literature.
But, exactly.
Right. But so many of the books that I have used to teach my children and that you have used to teach your children are living literature. You know, when we do read those biographies or the historical fiction to our kids, those teach history in a way that a dry, typical textbook simply can't do.
Exactly. And let me mention that there are some living textbooks. Story of the World comes as an example to me, where we're not talking in little bitty chunks of here's the event, here are the facts around it, memorize the date, move on. Mm-hmm. You're learning more in the content, the concepts of what's going on in a story form.
Absolutely. And I was going to say that Mystery of History is another example of a history textbook that is truly living literature as well. So,
yes.
You know, we have, I'm actually jealous of my children that they get to learn things like history using living literature, and they don't have to suffer through the textbooks that you and I had to suffer through.
Exactly. And I will mention, you know, we've talked a lot about history, but this goes into science. This goes into grammar. And I will mention, you know, I've seen your Grammar Galaxy stuff, Melanie. It's living. It is a living, what I would call a living literature textbook.
Thank
for
you.
Teaching grammar. Yeah, absolutely.
That was definitely my intention, even though I wasn't specifically thinking about Charlotte Mason. I think I have at least addressed that aspect of her educational philosophy. Okay, so let's move on from living literature. What is narration? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. So narration is a fabulous way to get in a lot of language arts skills. I like to start children with narration using Aesop's fables, no matter what age they are. So if, for instance, if you read an Aesop's fable to a child and you ask them to retell the fable back to you, they have just done narration. What you want from them is to get as many of the details as possible. You don't want it to be a memorized thing because eventually you're going to move on to much bigger pieces of writing. You want them to essentially be able to tell you the beginning, the middle, and the end full of detail. You want them to be able to tell you about the characters, tell you about the settings. You want them to be able to assimilate everything that they've just read and kind of retell it back to you in their own way. And so in doing narration, you can imagine if you're able to tell the beginning, middle, and end of a story in rich detail, guess what that's going to translate over to in your writing someday? Fabulous writing. Mm-hmm. It also is super, super good for your brain because you're having to comprehend something that either someone has read to you or you have read to them, you've heard been read to you. You've got to comprehend that. You have to order it all in your brain, and then you have to regurgitate it in a way that makes sense. So, you know, I also do a lot of brain training stuff. Narration is fabulous for your brain as well as the language arts.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it really helps kids who have trouble paying attention. It gives them a reason to focus because they know that they're going to be asked to retell what they've heard.
Exactly. And it's heard or read. You know, my high schooler at this point, I don't always read along with his books. So I expect him to come and tell me about them. And really at that point, that's what it is. Hey, tell me what you're learning. And then, you know, if he's not quite told me something that I feel like is thorough enough, then I can say, you know, I don't really understand. Why did the character do that? And so he will go into then more discussion about it. So it's really neat at the high school level that it sort of turns more into this discussion versus a lesson, because narration to little ones can really seem like a lesson, and it's love that, yeah, it can, mm-hmm. you know, it's not always been the favorite thing in our home to do, but it has been an important thing. And I've not been super, super awesome with it. Some people do it every day for every subject. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it's necessary. I feel like a little bit a day or even a few times a week still gets in the necessary skills.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Can we talk about outside time?
Because,
sure. Because I have read something like 6 hours a day is what Charlotte Mason recommended for kids having outside time.
Okay.
And I just laugh at that.
This is where I will likely get in trouble by Charlotte Mason purists, mm-hmm. because, you know, I probably should have said this at the very, very beginning. While I consider myself fully a Charlotte Mason homeschooler, I am not a Charlotte Mason purist. In other words, she had suggested things, whether it's that many hours outdoors or narration for every subject or you know, whatever, mm-hmm. that we have not always done in our homeschool, because our homeschool has got to work for us. Mm-hmm. And 6 hours outside may have worked in the early years when I had little tiny people and nobody really had anything else to do besides a little tiny bit of school and then let's get outside and play. But, you know, as we get older and have more responsibilities as parents, as our kids get older and have more responsibilities, have music lessons that they have to attend, have other events to go to, it just gets a little bit harder. So what I like to tell people is as much outdoor time as possible. Mm-hmm. And her goal in that was the more outside time you have, the more you have a chance to go and learn about your environment, to experience it, to imagine, to, you know, to use your imagination, to do all of those things that when you're in book work, you may or may not do, because she definitely didn't want us spoon feeding children. So she felt like the more experiential stuff you had, which outdoor time would be, the more likely you were to be able to kind of put it all together in your own brain and make sense of it. Mm-hmm. So that's where all of those hours came in. And while I do believe in a lot of outdoor time, we certainly do not do that many hours and really never have. Mm-hmm. And I will say that sometimes our outdoor time has always been in nature study, which, you know, she would distinguish the outdoor time separate from nature study, because the outdoor time was supposed to be you're kind of on your own doing your own thing. So, you know, some of our nature study has taken up that time as well.
All right. Well, I want to get into that next, but by asking about the extreme position of 6 hours a day, I don't mean to suggest that I see no value in what she's saying. When I was a kid, I spent hours of my time. It probably was 6 hours a day, especially in the summer. I grew up in a northern climate where it was pretty brutal winters. But the kinds of things that I did as a kid, I don't see my own children doing. You know, I made mud pies. This was the most fun thing for me to do. I made mud pies. I used these little tiny, probably poisonous berries to decorate my pies. And my brother and I did imaginative play all day, every day. And I see great value in it, and it is definitely something that I want to incorporate more of into my own homeschooling with my own children. It's not even really a homeschooling issue, is it? It's more of a parenting issue, as you were saying. You know, how much time do we ask our children to spend outside to engage their imaginations where they're not playing something that's already been constructed and arranged for them, but we're asking them to just get creative. So I do really appreciate that perspective that she has. So when it comes to nature study, this is also something that I have dabbled in, and it relates to this dichotomy that I've kind of drawn already, which is extremism. I don't know what it is with me and a lot of other homeschoolers where everything has to be an extreme, right? And so I got the Handbook of Nature Study, and I got the journals, you know, the drawing journal for my kids. And I was bound and determined that we were going to be going outside day after day and experiencing nature and drawing all these creatures and things and the plants that we saw, even though my kids hate to draw. And even though I'm really not an outdoor girl. I wish I was, but I'm just not. And so it kind of became something that I just dropped because I was trying to go to such an extreme. And so can you tell me what is the value of this for us as homeschoolers, incorporating nature study, and what does a realistic approach to that look like? Because we're all about homeschool sanity. So how can we do this and still keep our minds?
I really love that question because that is the entire premise of the Charlotte Mason Homeschooling in 18 Easy Lessons book that I did, because I think that so many of us get so wrapped up in having to do everything perfectly, whether we're trying to do Charlotte Mason perfectly or classical homeschooling perfectly or the textbook curriculum perfectly, that we get so burdened with what we think we have to do that we end up being so overwhelmed we don't really do any of it well. Or we burn out quickly because we are doing everything to a T. So I'm really glad you asked that question. Let's go to nature study specifically. So in nature study, I would tell people, do what you can. I think nature study is incredibly important. And I think you could potentially use nature study as your science curriculum in the younger years. So if you did nature study 2-3 times a week, and that was it, and you were serious about it, that could be your science curriculum. However, most of us are using other science curricula, and we're trying to throw nature study on top of it, and we're trying to do all of those all the time. You don't have to do that. So what I tell people is, if you're not a nature person, if you can only commit to one nature study a month, you're doing okay. Mm-hmm. Just do that one time a month and do it well. And that means that that is the science for that day. You're not going to try to do science in another textbook or whatever you're using and then go do nature study. Drop out the other science and put nature study in its place that day. If you can fit it in once a week, awesome. And you know, I really think too, we have to be, we have to understand who we are and what we're about. So if we hate to get outside and it's everything we can do to get outside, you know what? Once a month is okay. Honor yourself and in that. And it's okay. There are even things you could do to send your kids out into nature study while you sit inside too. And I have some of those resources for you. Okay. If you felt like you wanted to get it in more often, but you mm-hmm. particularly didn't want to get outside. However, it's kind of like that with everything. Mm-hmm. Let's say we were talking about living literature. Some people really get overwhelmed in the living literature of it. And they're like, I'm reading all the time. You don't have to read all the time. Choose one good living literature book a month then, or read one book with your kids a month and listen to one in the car on audio. So there are definitely ways to add bits and pieces of the things that you're like, oh, I really wish I would get this in, but not to do it just full on. Mm-hmm. There are ways around it.
I so appreciate you saying that, Cindy, and I'm really excited about it. Okay, so help me with the details of the nature study. So what I love to do with my kids is I love to go on hikes. Love it. I love doing that. Okay. So yes, I'm more of an indoor girl, but when the weather is nice, I love to go hiking with my kids. So In order to do nature study, though, do I have to have a journal and drawing pencils for everyone to draw everything that we see? Or is there another aspect to nature study?
That's such a good question. What I tell people is nature study is what you want it to be. There is a prescription for Charlotte Mason nature study, but I do not think that it's necessary to do that. Again, that's where I'm probably going to get in trouble with Charlotte Mason purists. But to me, yes, sometimes you want to pull out those nature journals. Sometimes you do want to go and observe and draw details and label and look it up in a field guide and you know, do all the things you're quote unquote supposed to do. But what's wrong with taking a hike and saying, okay, kids, today we're focusing on wildflowers. So I want you to take this hike and I want each one of you, we're going to hike up the mountain and notice a flower. Notice all the flowers, actually, but I want you, by the time we hike down, you're going to pick out one that you really want everybody else to see. And we're going to try to identify your each one of your flowers. And so what you pack up the trail that day is a field guide of wildflowers. Mm-hmm. And you identify them real quick and you're done. Maybe tomorrow you read a book about wildflowers and their reproductive process, or maybe you ask your children, okay, so you found this particular flower. I want you to get on the computer today, research this and write a paragraph about it. Mm-hmm. Or whatever. I mean, it could be anything, or it could be as simple as let's just walk up the field and notice the flowers. How many different varieties do we see? You can do this in so, so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And that's the entire reason I wrote the 100 plus Creative Nature Walks book, because so many people were getting bogged down with, I have to do nature study right, and my kids hate it, and we're so bored, and I don't even know what to do. And I wanted to say, you know what? You don't have to do what you think you have to do. Here's this nature walk for you, and it's really cool, and your kids are going to be excited, and basically you have no prep for it. Mm-hmm. So just get outside and go.
Absolutely. And I love that book, Cindy, and I loved your recommendation that I could keep that on an iPad, for example, and take my iPad with me on a hike, and I don't even have to plan ahead what I want to do because I can just go right through the table of contents and find an amazing nature study to do for the day while we're out and about. So it is a fabulous, fabulous resource, and I know we talked about that in our previous interview, so you are going to want to check the show notes to listen to that interview with Cindy as well. Okay, Cindy, is there anything else that you have written to help homeschoolers implement the Charlotte Mason philosophy? Hold on. Is there anything else that you have written to help homeschoolers implement a Charlotte Mason philosophy in a sensible way?
I have. I alluded to the Charlotte Mason Homeschooling in 18 Easy Lessons. That book has been just so much fun to see people open it up and go, you finally made this easy for me. Because I mentioned that Charlotte Mason's own writings can be a tad overwhelming. They're not impossible to read, but if you're trying to implement a Charlotte Mason homeschool and you're trying to do it, you know, in a reasonable time frame, it would take you a little while to kind of peruse all of that and to take it in and to figure out what you're going to do. So what I did is I just focused on one aspect a week. And so the first week is living literature. And I've kind of defined it. I've given you places to go look for it. And then I give you a little homework assignment. So for that week, your homework assignment is to try to add a little living literature into your day or your week. The next week focuses on short lessons. So again, I've kind of defined that. I have given you some examples of that. And then I give you homework for you to begin implementing that. So we go through each of the things, narration, copy work, poetry, living math, nature study, So in 18 weeks, if you've done all of your homework, you will have a Charlotte Mason style homeschooling up and running. And I just tried to make it so, so simple for you and sensible, because sensible is the way I have to roll. I have three kids. We live on a farm. We're busy. I do not have time to be anything but sensible right now.
Cindy, I need that book. And I don't have that one, believe it or not. So that's my homework. I'm going to get that book and start to implement it. Even at this late date in my homeschooling, there's always something that we can do to kind of change things up and motivate ourselves and motivate our kids. I'm a big believer in that kind of variety. And, you know, if you're an eclectic homeschooler like I am, this is a great way to discover new approaches, even if they're just a small part of your overall homeschooling style, that is something that can stick and just really be a blessing to you. So I am so thrilled that you wrote that book, Cindy. But that isn't all that you've done, right? My understanding is that you created a free gift for my listeners that they will receive when they subscribe to both our mailing list, both Psycho with Six and our Journey Westward. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. So I've got a little guide on how to creatively do nature study, and that's going to be free for you. And along with that, I have included five really fun notebooking pages. They are not your typical notebooking pages that are just sort of, hey, go find a flower and draw it. They are basically little lessons on a page. So you will be able to take these five pages, and walk out into the woods with them or wherever you're going to head that day and get a little nature study done on each page.
That is fabulous. I love it. You are so generous. Thank you so much, Cindy. So you can claim your free copy of the Guide to Doing Nature Study with these free notebooking pages by texting me at 44222 with the word nature. When you text me, you will receive a request for your email address, and then that freebie will land in your inbox. Cindy, this has been so fabulous. I know everyone who is listening is going to want to claim not only your freebie, but they're going to want to get so many of these books that you've written. Where can we find them, and where can we connect with you?
Well, I used to be Shining Dawn Books, but everything is now under Our Journey Westward. It was a little easier. We talked about me needing to simplify a little bit. So everything, my blog, which gives you lots and lots of creative ideas about Charlotte Mason creative homeschooling, and all of my products can be now found on OurJourneyWestward.com.
And you also have a Facebook page that is fabulous. Is that also Our Journey Westward?
It is.
Great. That is wonderful. Cindy, thank you again for taking the time to visit with us and explain the Charlotte Mason philosophy to us in a way that will allow us to keep our sanity. And I did just want to make a note that the resources that Cindy mentioned are going to be in the show notes, and that includes the Ambleside website that Cindy mentioned that you can find at AmblesideOnline.org. I just wanted to make sure that that was clear for people if you were searching for that, because there are a lot of Ambleside URLs out there. Cindy, thanks again, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you so much, Melanie.
Today's action steps are: follow my page at facebook.com/psychowithsix to see great homeschool resources and have a chance to win them. Start talking with your kids more while you read. Share your experience, opinion, and ask more questions. Request Cindy's free guide to nature study by texting the word nature to 44222. Be sure to check the show notes for all the links discussed in this episode at homeschoolsanity.com/Charlotte. Next week, we'll chat about how to be successful in scheduling. Have a happy homeschool week.
Thank you for joining me for the Homeschool Sanity Show. This has been a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.